Going to have a fun show today. Got a roundtable with a couple of, in fact, a former guest. One of our guests has been on before.
I thought he looked familiar. I didn't know if we'd serve time together or if I saw his picture in the post office or what.
Just a word of warning to the audience. There was something in the barbecue that Stone ate this weekend. He has been an odd bird today. But anyway, so you've been warned. No, we got two guests in the studio. Ron Davis, who is the president of Savad Solutions, and then Charles Davis, chief financial officer.
That's correct.
Okay, of Savad Solutions. Savad is a technology solutions and services company that focuses on, I can't read my writing.
Automating processes.
Automating business processes. How about that? So welcome to the show, Ron and Charles.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Why don't we start by each of you telling a little bit about what you do and what your background is.
Okay, well, I guess I'll start here. In regards to Savad itself, as you mentioned, we're a technology and services company dedicated to help automate business processes, which in reality might not say a lot because that can cover quite a bit. So what we really do is we work with companies, small to medium business. We also work with education and government. And really kind of dive in to understand where their issues are. And this is their productivity issues. This is their business process issues. And so what we do is we go in and we try to identify for both the workers, because there's operations problems, there's bottlenecks that are keeping them from being productive, from being efficient. We help identify those. And also for the executives, we help find the broken processes that are hindering them from making the decisions to help move the company forward, help advance it or just keep it surviving. So after doing that, our goal is not to change these processes, but simply to automate them. There's a culture in the company that they've spent a lot of time coming up with however they're doing things. And obviously, if they're making money, those things have worked. Now, what happens over time, though, just as you were talking about clutter, is that we see clutter in business. We see that things don't change, and that you add more and more people to it and to a process. And then after a while, you've got people doing duplications. It might be a data entry. It might be just a decision or approval process. But there's too much. What we see is there's too much duplication in that. So we kind of come and try to streamline that, try to help them understand where they can go from one end to the other, more in the straight line to reduce time. And that way, obviously, we can help lower costs. But even more importantly, we also try to make it that way for the executives so that they can get the information they need to make the important decisions for the company.
So you and Charles are just sitting around at the family picnic, and you say, I think we'll go into this technology automation business. That's probably not how it happened. What's your background? Why'd you get into this racket to begin with?
Well, my background is I worked in operations for a number of years. I was a general manager for a distribution company. And, what I saw was, I had sales, I had administration, I had HR, I had all the different departments underneath me. And I just noticed immense inefficiencies. I mean, it took us forever to do anything. And that was dealing at a branch level and also dealing with corporate. But as a general manager, I really was not aware of what technology solutions could help out. So once I got out of that business and got over into technology side, I started to become more knowledgeable what solutions were out there. And after working with hundreds of customers, I feel I can go in now and I've seen just about every situation out there as far as why a company is not able to be productive. And I'm able to go and work with them and offer them this help as far as the technologies. And quite honestly, processes is my passion. I mean, I'm just that type of guy. So it just kind of is natural for me.
Well, inefficiency in business is nothing new. Why start Savad at this time?
Well, that's a great question. Looking at the last couple of years and seeing what's gone on with the economy, we see that technology spending has been way down. And a lot of companies, big, small, middle, everything has really held off on spending money. So in the last, say, 12 months, 18 months, I talked to Ron. I said, look, I see some opportunities coming down the road the next 2 years from this point, the next 5 years from this point. There's going to be a huge upswing in tech spending from all life cycles of companies. So we looked at the numbers. We looked at kind of where we could position ourselves in that marketplace and look at what we could do to add to the marketplace as far as serving government, as far as serving education, as far as serving small business, and found that now is the right time to get involved. Now is the right time to put our name out there and our products out there, because you know tech spending in 2010 is going to be up 4 or 5% on all fronts. And tech spending in 12 and 13, you're going to see a huge shift coming with many companies, and especially small business, who haven't had the money or haven't had the desire to really upgrade their services on the tech side. Well, that's changing. That's going to have to change because everybody's becoming more competitive, and the technology you have will help you not only weather future storms but make you even stronger as the economy rebounds as it is currently. So we saw the opportunities now, and now to ride the wave of the upswing on the tech spending side and position ourselves to be a player in that marketplace and to help serve the needs of the small businesses that are out there that really need to take a step forward. So that was the major, that's one of the major reasons now is the time to look forward.
So what are some indicators, what are some signs that an organization might notice or look for or uncover that suggest to them, hey, we need to talk to the folks at Savant?
Well, I think we'll probably answer this on two sides. One is on mine, and we'll have Charles answer on his for more of a financial side. What we see now is because the economy has been in the situation it has, is that companies or let's just say the business leaders or executives have looked inward within their companies to understand why they're not meeting the revenue goals. When money's coming in and sales are happening, and depending on whatever type of, whether it's if it's a government organization, the budgets and the money's coming from the state or from the feds, things are okay. But when all that starts drying up, then the questions start happening internally. Why is this happening? So, we start seeing these executives asking their employees, well, why are you doing this? And that's really where we come in, because we help guide them through that. Why is this happening? And we look at, you might have four people who are touching, whatever process that only one person needs to. And, when that question is asked to the workers, it's because that's how we've always done it. And so companies getting to this complacency of, okay, things are running okay, let's don't touch them. But with the change of the economy, that has changed. So, for our side, we get in there and we help them identify that. We help make them aware of, okay, here's your processes the ones that are broken. But really, more importantly, we make them aware of what options are available for them. And coming as on that side of the business and the operations, I never knew. And I never knew who to trust. And so we come in, seriously, and so we come in from a trusted advisor to really say, hey, look, here's what solutions are available, both small, very inexpensive, and bigger, and where they can take steps in being able to, start creating those efficiencies. So from that side, that's what we do, and I'll let him answer on the other side.
And it goes hand in hand. I mean, what you're seeing today is a lot of companies, again, have kind of weathered a storm, and the ones that weathered a storm are sitting on more cash than really they've sat on a long time. I mean, it's a known fact that among all corporate balance sheets, there's more cash on corporate balance sheets than any time in history.
Is that right?
That is true.
Huh.
So that being the fact, with cash, you got to do something with it. Eventually, it doesn't really help you unless you don't reinvest it. So with that being the case, and that companies that have gotten through the turmoil are looking to see, okay, how do we be leaders in the future? So that being the case, technology, productivity, innovation are the ways you make yourselves different than your competitor. So if you have the cash, which a lot of companies do today, and have the ability to spend, which we're seeing the spending trends go up, and of course, the same guys, all the players out there look at the same information, and when they see their competitor spend, they're going to start spending. So we're seeing that on that front, and that being the case, that's what's driving. That's, you ask about signs. Your competitors are spending. You're reading about more spending. Mm-hmm. So I've got to go out there and look and see what options I have. And that's where we come in and say, look, you're going to spend X dollar, but we're going to save you X amount of dollars in the future for spending today. You know, there's examples of where we've already helped companies eliminate temporary workers on different assignments by the software we put in place. Ron, do you want to mention that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's a number of examples, but one most recently was actually a county government here in Georgia, where a critical department within that county that county government, and they were having an issue because of federal regulations and new federal regulations and also state regulations that had come down and keep coming down. And the issue was that they could not keep up because they had so much more, I hate to use the word red tape, but I'm going to use the word red tape, that they had to go through to be able to get their jobs done. And so in saying that, they had to go out and hire temporary staff to help supplement what needed to be done. And so, you know, what we did is we came in with a software solution and identified the weakest point within the issues that they were having. Because, quite honestly, they were getting all these regulations, but they weren't getting any tools to help fight them or help accomplish them. So we came in and we identified it. We put in a software solution. We did some services, you know, obviously trained them on how to best use it in their in their environment. And recently, the executive director came up to me and she mentioned that she had a meeting with the county commissioner. And in that meeting, she told him strictly because of our software solutions, she was able to reduce the temporary staff by, in this case, I think it was half. It was, you know, she was hiring six and there was only three that she needed to. Now, that doesn't help the temporary workers, but it does help the staff, the permanent staff that's there, helps them be able to do their jobs more efficient and hopefully help them keep their jobs much longer because they're now able to meet these regulations that they had no choice. They had to meet them.
Well, Charles, you indicated that corporate organizations have more cash in the books than they've had in some time. But, Ron, I know a significant portion of your clients are governmental, and we've all read that government is strapped and that we're hearing there's going to be more and more cuts. How do you begin to crack that code and get these guys to make this investment? You touched on that a bit, but go into that a little bit more for us.
Well, you know, there's a big difference in dealing with in business and in dealing with county government. As you said, just government education are more what's the word I'm looking for?
They slow.
I think that rely. Poor is one, but they rely, you know, on what's happening at a state or at a federal level. You know, in the case of both government education, one thing you have to look at is they rely on property taxes. I mean, property taxes is something that brings in the money, and we've seen in strictly, you know, if we look in the Atlanta area, what's happened to, you know, property taxes and foreclosures and everything else. So the base of revenue has been reduced. But, you know, there's no short-term process in getting in and meeting with these two areas, education and government. But the thing is that they still have to get their jobs done. So, you know, if there is, and, you know, they're dealing with, I mean, we're kind of their employers, you know, so somewhat in that, you know, if they're not getting their jobs done, it's very public. You know, it becomes into the newspaper. You read about different school districts who are not able to do this and that. Obviously, we've read all about the issues in Cobb County where they're laid off 700 plus teachers. And, you know, that means increased school size, increased class size. And so, you know, they have to do something. So it's about going in and meeting with them on a regular basis and about really trying to educate them at first. And that's our first job, is to educate them, because they need to understand what is available. And as we educate them, then we really show them the value and how, as Charles mentioned earlier, is that sometimes you have to make an investment. You know, there's an investment up front that's going to save you quite a bit of money on the back end. And so we have to identify that and be able to talk to all the right players. And then, you know, once we do and once we get in there, we show the value, we're actually able to move that into another county government or another school district, because they're all dealing with the same issues.
So tell us a little bit more about the work itself, because you mentioned earlier that an example of four people touching a process that really only one person needed to touch. What are some some common things. Does that happen a lot? What are some of the common roadblocks, pathologies that you see when you go into a client?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, you know, I sell technology and services. There are a lot of companies that sell technology and services. And what you see a lot of times is you'll go into a company or organization, and they might be using one software application for HR, a different software application for administration, a different software application for, you know, whatever other department is in there. And, you know, they want to get the data. Yeah, so I'm going to take a step back. Everything that happens with any company, I don't care what company, what type it is, all begins with two things. It's either data or it's documents. And that data could be it could be in electronic form. It could be nothing. It could be just like we're talking right now. It could be in a verbal form. And the documents obviously can be, it could be quotes. It could be engineering drawings. It could be anything. From there, it goes through the different processes to finally, you know, leading to revenue, to decision making, to relationships internally and externally. And it's that all that in between that's the problem. And a lot of times, you know, we'll see where we have workers who will enter information into one system and then turn around and take that same data and enter into another system and into another system. And
even I can sense that's probably not the right way to go about it, is it?
No, but going back to what I said, it's like this is the way we've always done it.
Right.
And but if you take a step back, you can see it's kind of ridiculous. So why you're doing it that way? The productivity is way down, and so you know we try to help identify that and just say okay. And that's a very common thing. There's really three areas that we deal with a lot. It's the compliance, it's the operations, and it's the decision making. So the compliance is a lot of times they call us in for that reason, is that, hey, we want to get rid of all our paper, we want to scan it because we need to keep it for so many years. And that's fine. There's reasons to do that, because if you don't have it and you can't find it, the fines could be can be pretty sizable. So we'll do that. But once we get in there, we really do try to look at those processes and help those operations and help be able to reduce those multiple data entry points and be able to help people put their fingers on the information much quicker. And that's really where we see our ultimate value in dealing with the executives, and exactly what I just mentioned there, when they can pull all this information together quickly to make decisions, that's when they're able now to really push the company forward. Just to give you an example, last week I was in a school district dealing with a director level employee there, and her issue was that she is in her particular department, they actually from time to time face lawsuits from parents that actually has to deal with special education. And the issue that she has a lot of times is being able just to get her hands on the data that she needs, because it's in so many different places. And she's like, I want to be able to go one place, be able to look and be able to take a snapshot of what's going on in my district. And that's what we're helping her with right now. And so if she has that, now she can make those decisions to help hopefully be able to see a lawsuit coming on before it happens. Or more importantly, just making sure the kids have the right education or the availability to the right education. So that's a few examples of what we see.
Well, that's a key point, though, I think, in that you said one of the things we do is help decision-making. And I think when your average person on the street hears about automating business processes, they don't understand how that affects, how that can impact decision-making. Speak a little bit more about that and how that can help. I just think that's critical. I mean, there's a cool video on your blog where you kind of outline how you work around these roadblocks and how it leads to decision-making. Just, if you can, just help clarify how profound that is to an organization.
Well, it's everything. You know, I look in our organization and the decisions that Charles and myself make, and that those decisions are based off information that we have. So we from a company our size all the way up to, a multi-billion-dollar company, the executives are making the decisions that affect the employees, that affect the future of the business, affect everything. And the problem is because we have, if you look at right now, if you look at just the environment, we are overloaded with information. We can get it anywhere and everywhere. And that's not the problem. The problem is being able to put it all together to make those decisions. And so when we look at a company, and we look at, there's all these different data points coming in, and none of them are connected. And it's critical that an executive can be able to put their hands on the right pieces of data at the right time to be able to make those decisions. And that's from just the process side, from, you know, the decisions. Obviously, those carry on into, you know, more of a fiscal or financial side also. And, I'll let Charles maybe touch on that point for a minute.
And that's true. I mean, obviously, time is money. And if you can make decisions much quicker using the information you have at hand, then obviously you're going to make better decisions, because you're going to be able to get those decisions out there, and it's going to lead to better productivity and better efficiency. And what we've gone through the last 3 years, the companies that can be more efficient and more productive going forward are the future leaders, whether it's small business, mid-business, large business, public companies, private companies, it doesn't matter. Technology is going to become more and more of a key. And all companies are having to deal with this issue. And it's because that in the past, things were very good, and a lot of companies got kind of lazy. Well, things are the way we do business has changed, and it has changed going forward for a long time. And companies need, the smart companies are using technology, business automation, to help make decisions much quicker. And I'll give you one good example that I looked at. HP, everybody knows who HP is. HP decided to lay off 9,000 people. And the first thing you're saying, maybe they're offshoring that to India. Maybe they're doing some things like that. That wasn't the case. It was through business automation. They were going to lay off 9,000 people through the next 3 years, spend $1 billion to do that. Well, their cost savings through business automation is going to be $700 million after tax per year. So you can see, spending $1 billion, you're going to get it back in 18 months, and then continue to have those savings going forward. It's a no-brainer. And they're leading the way. In fact, some of the offshoring groups overseas are getting nervous because they're not seeing the jobs coming the way, because the United States is becoming much better at productivity and at using the technology that's coming down the pipe to be more efficient. And that's a key going forward. If we're going to get over what the government has spent on the deficit side, it's going to come from two areas: innovation and productivity. That's the only way we're going to do it. And I think that we are becoming better at innovation, and we will be. And companies at all levels are going to become more productive through that innovation that's coming down the pipe. And we're here to help introduce that to companies at all, especially the small business in the medium business and government education, because those are the guys that kind of get overlooked at times. And those are the guys we walked in. One example, we walked into an investment fund, a real estate investment fund, and you would think probably 50, 75 million in assets. You think these guys would have cutting edge technology, very, very, very profitable company. Their technology, Ron, was 12 years old.
Yeah, at least it was almost really kind of non-existent.
And I mean, it was kind of mind-boggling, because you have a company that's generating a ton of cash flow, has the means to spend on technology, just really hadn't thought about it. As Ron said earlier, this is how we've always done it. We went in there. Those guys have taken their decision process, a decision that could have taken a week to 2 weeks, we've gotten it down to a day or 2 days for them.
Maybe even less than that.
Maybe an hour.
we've put information, vital information that they could not put their hands on, and just given them multiple options on how they'll be able to pull that data up now and be able to look at this. And this is critical decision-making data that they basically had it sitting in file cabinets. And so by automating that, now they're able to move forward.
And that leads, obviously that leads to a higher productivity, more efficiency, and they can make better decisions quicker. That's the key. That's the bottom line.
Well, we at High Velocity love that increased speed. But, Ron, put a picture on that. So the old way was all this stuff stored in a file cabinet in a dusty basement that was impossible to find. What is it? How do you get it now?
Okay, so and we'll just take the example that we're talking about right now. Yes, they had a lot of information, and this was I would call it market intelligence. That's the best way to put it, and that they have looked at over the years. And you start looking at this information, and it's pretty valuable. People have taken quite a bit of time putting this together, and done a lot of homework in regards to demographics and with the markets and financial and everything else. But, as we mentioned, it was sitting in file cabinet. So it was really not doing them any good, because a new situation would come up and they might want to do a, you know, they might want to take it and do a comparison, but they really couldn't do that efficiently. So what we did is we put it into a software package that now they can go in, and we've given them the ability to be able to search for it by keywords. That's one way. So in keywords being in location. So this is, we're talking about some properties here. So they wanted to be able to look by location. They wanted to be able to look by the tenants that we're using. So say if it was a shopping center, they want to be able to look at it that way. They also wanted to be able to go in and look at who was offering that that particular property to them. And so we set up that way. But the other thing that we did is that if you looked at this, you know, these proposals that were put together, you know, they were multiple pages. I mean, they could be up to 200 or 300 pages. And we also gave them the ability to be able to search for text within those documents. So, you know, so let's just say not only can they search by these keywords, but think of almost like a Google search. They can take this all this market intelligence, and they can do a Google search within it and find all the matching, whatever the matching criteria was. So, you know, what if, you know, it could be, let's just say that it was a high-end condo or whatever. I mean, there's a number of different ways they could do this, but it would put up all those matches, and now they can pull up that information right in front of them, you know, within seconds, and be able to look at it, look at what they're looking, you know, the current proposal they have in front of them, and do the comparisons to see is the pricing right, is all the different factors that help them make that decision. And so now, like I said, they can make those decisions right away, as opposed to having, knowing that the information's there, but no one just take too long to be able to find it.
So a digital interface versus a 4-inch 3-ring binder stuck in the basement.
You got that exactly right, yes.
Talk to us a little bit about the sales and marketing side, and really part of what I'm after is I'd like to explore the change management side of this thing, because what I can envision is you go in and you sell this to someone who can write the check to start doing business with you. But I wonder, do you find yourself at some points in a project fighting different pockets of leadership or faced with some cultural barriers that you have to deal with? What is that part of your world like?
Yeah, there's plenty of that. You know, typically, we'll initiate with an executive, and because the executive has the vision that they want to make these changes. So, but you know, obviously, when we're dealing with processes, we deal all the way down to from executives to middle management to administration. So we're dealing with everybody.
And if you start messing with something in the mailroom, now you're getting in my knickers.
That's exactly right.
And I'm not
right.
happy about it, right?
Exactly right. So, you know, so there's a couple of things that we do. Number one, we try to start small. And, you know, so if we go into a company that might have, a typical company has departments, has a financial department or accounting department, has an HR department, has all these different departments, we might just concentrate on one and be able to show the value in that one department before we actually move on to the rest of them. That way, you know, you can, it's much easier to start small and get the kinks out, you know, because even though we sell proven solutions, it still has to fit in their environment. So it takes time to be able to massage these processes and make sure it's working for their particular company. So, but in dealing with that, we deal with people who do not like change. And I've...
Which is what, 99.9% of the population,
it's
right?
It's quite a few. And so, you know, it's easy to go in and say, you know what, once this is all done, you're going to love it, you know, but it's, you know, sometimes it's a little bit painful, and that's where we really need the executive who is selling that vision and really explaining to them and walking them through why they're doing that. And if the employees can get a better understanding of why, then it helps our job a little bit. It helps them from resisting this and just in more, you know, embracing what's going on. So, but the challenges are there, and it's just human nature that, you know, that we deal with, and you know, but we understand that. We go in understanding that, and so, you know, we're equipped to be able to work with all different types of people in there.
I will tell you that some of the sales we have, some of our best, as in any sales process, some of our best advocates are our current customers. So in the case Ron's talking about, that we've been able, you know, they can call some of our prior people, and word gets out real quick how we've helped and saved money, and the change processes have been so painful, and word, especially in the government area and some of the areas we've been in, once word gets out, some of that goes away because they're saying, well, they did it well there. They did it well there. Now it's kind of a trend.
Right.
So, you know, I'm willing to bring it in here. So that's been, you know, some of your best salespeople are your current customers and your prior customers. So
we've talked a lot about larger corporate organizations and large governmental bureaucracies. Does this apply to a small business as well? I mean, is there value for automated business process for the small business entrepreneur?
I think actually that's the most critical area. Small business is really where we're focusing a lot of our time now. And, you know, we have a long history with government and education, and so it's natural for us to, you know, to continue to concentrate and focus on that area. But small business is, you know, I have a piece of my heart that just loves entrepreneurs. And, you know, being one myself is that, you know, I really want to really help and educate entrepreneurs that there are ways out there to really build their business and build it quicker. And so if you look at small business in that they're trying to build up their business to a level where they become a medium or large business, they need these tools more than anybody because they might not have the workers that or the staff to be able to get where they want to. So, you know, they need to make sure that they understand and know what tools are out there that are available to them and know how to be able to implement those that they might be able to, you know, to not necessarily replace a worker, but to make the number of workers they have more productive.
I would guess a typical entrepreneur would stand there and think, oh, it's just going to be cost prohibitive. I can't afford to do anything like that. That's probably not the case either, right? But that investment is so critical to their long-term health.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? If you asked me that question maybe 6-7 years ago, I would probably say that you're right. It is cost prohibitive. But what's happened, and one of the things I love seeing is that the availability of inexpensive, very well put together software tools are out there. And so there is no reason that any business, and I don't care the size of the business, can't take advantage of these tools because they are out there, they're easy to use, and that's one of the things that we strive for. We want to make sure that our tools are easy to use and are very flexible because you don't want to spend the first 8 months just trying to learn how to use this tool. You want to be able to get up and going and be seeing returns on it as soon as possible. So, but they exist. They're out there, and those are the ones that we really try to concentrate on small business with.
And Charles, as you said, the trends seem to indicate that there's an increased understanding of the need to invest in technology. You think that's going to filter down to the smaller business?
I do. I think we're, again, going on with the current jobless recovery and kind of employment where it is. We're on a new, I think you're going to see a huge growth in the entrepreneurial world. Because a lot of people aren't going back into corporate America. They're saying, I'm going to do my own thing. You know, I've had 10, 20, 30 years of experience in working for a big corporation. I think I can do this on my own. So, and a lot of people who are doing that are very smart and understand investment today pays off in the future. So, yes, I think people do understand the need, and they're going to see it more and more as the news stories continue to come out of how investment today is saving. You know, it not only saves, but helps you become more productive, hire more people, and do bigger and better things. And really, again, those are the things you want to do. You want to make that investment, even if you're a one-man show, because that's going to help you grow for the future.
One of your charges with the organization is to help raise capital. Speak to a little to your background in that space and how you see the environment unfolding over the next year.
Yeah, I mean that's a great question. I mean, raising capital is always has and always will be an interesting endeavor. We understand the debt side. I mean, capital comes in two forms: equity and debt. And we all understand the debt side of that equation is somewhat shut down, has been for a couple of years. And my expectation, I mean, bank lending is off 25% this year over last year. Now you would think it would be up this year. I mean, things are improving, but it's down 25%. I mean, that's a big number.
Yeah.
And I don't see going to my – let me talk about a little bit about my background first. I was I've got an undergraduate in finance from Winthrop University and MBA from Chapel Hill University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. And I went into the banking sector, worked for one of the large corporate banks, senior vice president, helped on the corporate lending side, and helped on the capital market side. So there was money raises we did for companies that we dealt with. Left that, was CFO for a got into the entrepreneur world, CFO for a regional developer in North Carolina. And I was charged with raising equity capital and debt capital and did a good bit of that. And while I was at Chapel Hill, I got involved with a couple of classmates there, and we actually raised our own money and started, and I'm still a partner in this, kind of an investment fund called the Metamont Group, where we actually invest in private and public companies. So, and we've got investments, again, in small businesses and in public large traded companies. So I've seen on both sides of the fence. I've seen where I've had to go out and try to raise capital with other companies, and where I've got capital and companies have come to me and I've gone through the due diligence on that side. So that's given me a unique perspective on both sides of the fence. So that's a little bit about my background. Again, going back to the equity and debt side, you know, we're not going to raise the capital through debt. I think a lot of small businesses are shying away from debt. One, it's very difficult to get in the current environment. And two, you know, growing at some point you do want debt, but growing, you know, through equity and through other areas and through organically, I mean, that's our charge is to continue to grow capital through organic means, meaning, you know, raising it internally through sales and revenue. Also, we are out there looking at capital needs through the equity side, and we've gone to the what's called the angel investor community and done a good job with those guys and gotten funded through that area. So I keep in tight touch with our investors on the angel side and keep showing them the momentum we've got going, which is exciting because, I mean, you know, obviously anytime you go out there and bring investors in, you want to make sure you're doing the right thing for them. So we're excited as we continue to grow, as we continue to look at new opportunities, that I keep my investors happy and we continue to grow it organically through our cash flow.
So it's probably a non-issue at this point since you now have been on the High Velocity Radio Show. However, I'm still going to ask, tell me about your marketing. How do you go to market, differentiate yourself clearly and in a compelling way? Describe for folks what you've done and what you can do for them in such a way that they'll write those checks and help you grow organically.
Well, you know, our marketing is kind of threefold. Is that, you know, one of the things that Charles was mentioning earlier is we're driven by excellence. So the better job that we do in our current customers means referrals and new customers. And that's important. I mean, you know, I don't think there's a better way to market out there than word of mouth as far as this person did a great job, because we're looking for people that we can trust. And so that's an important part of us. So it is about, you know, trying to carry those referrals over and carry us to new customers. And we have been very, very successful doing that. So, you know, on that side, then we, you know, we're trying to use both the traditional marketing and now the new social media. And, you know, we believe that there's a huge opportunity in social media that, we're trying to investigate right now, trying to figure out the best way for us to be able to use that to promote our company. And, you know, so we're working with, a very astute marketing professional to help us.
Oh,
with
they're,
that.
They're, it's a very reputable firm. Yeah.
Yes, and so we're putting together some strategies to really push us forward there. So that's we've obviously have set up a website. We're blogging. You know, just to try to educate. I mean, one of the things that we keep mentioning here is that we need to educate a market so that they're aware of what's available out there.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to educate in all these different ways. We have we attend industry level trade shows that we have an opportunity there to go educate. You know, we're trying to do seminars and webinars to educate. We're trying to educate via the social media tools that are out there. So it's important for us to get the word out, especially as we talked about small business, to make these executives understand that there are options out there for them, because a lot of them are sitting there going, I don't know what I'm going to do. And we want to make sure that they know that there's people out there to help them.
So an educated prospect is might be a good potential client, but having an educated client certainly has got to make implementing these things so much more effective. You want a well-educated client that understands the issues, understands the service and the value of the service. I mean, you're going to need that once you get into the project and so that they understand what this is really all about.
Absolutely. You know, as I was mentioning before, we rely on the executives or, you know, whoever our, you know, our point person is within a company. We rely on them to help drive the message with everybody involved. And, you know, we can do that, but typically we're not signing these employees' paychecks, so they don't listen to us all the time. But but the executives there, they will listen to. So the more that we have this executive educated on exactly what these solutions will do, the better they can communicate that to everybody involved, and the easier that this implementation will flow.
I imagine there's some education that has to go down into the lower level of the organization, because they're people that are probably thinking, well, if this thing works, I may not have a job. I mean, how much of that kind of a problem do you come across?
Oh, I do, and you're exactly right. Everybody gets very defensive about their jobs. They want, you know, they're looking for job security, and when you see somebody coming in, you know, selling a software solution to a CEO or a VP or whatever it might be, and then you get workers that maybe administration staff or whoever it might be who is actually doing that multiple data entry, and they start getting scared for her jobs. And one of the things that we try to encourage all the times is when we're talking to executives, we never talk about, hey, you can get rid of these people. You know, we talk about more about trying to redeploy people in more productive areas. And, you know, we try to work with them and say, okay, here's a process, and maybe here's a hole that you have that you do need to put some, you know, put an employee or put some labor to make it a little bit more efficient. So it goes back to we really rely on the people involved to help sell this all the way through, that we're not coming in there saying, okay, we're going to put this in and we're just going to get rid of, you know, five people. It's more about trying to put this in to make, number one, make these employees' lives a little bit easier. You make their jobs a little bit easier and maybe help them be as productive in other areas.
We may get two very different answers from this, since we have two different people with their own personalities and that bring their own value to the table. But I'm curious, what do you find most rewarding about this work? What about it gets you up in the morning and says, I'm really glad I'm doing this work?
Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, if you look at our website, you know, our tagline is our passion is in the process, and that's who I am. I'm an organization freak. I love processes. I love trying to figure out how they work. So for me, it's very natural to go in, and also I love technology. So I've got both of those together. So it's very natural for me to be able to go into a company and sit down and listen to all their problems and actually enjoy it. You know, so that's what gets me. And plus, just being an entrepreneur and really wanting to see something grow. You know, as Charles mentioned earlier, you've got executives who have been in corporate world for a long time, and then they decide that they want to do it on their own, and that's exactly who I am. You know, I was in corporate for quite a number of years, and I said, look, I want to give this a go. I have some good ideas. I believe that I can run a company, and so with everything involved, it's fun getting up every morning.
Yeah,
and I would agree with that. I mean, the key is we're building a company from ground up. So the fun part is, we can make our own decisions. We can build the culture. We can decide where we want to go. We can decide what we want to do. And Ron and I have a very good rapport. And you know, we can drive this thing where we want it to go. And that's kind of what drives me. I mean, you know, I'm real excited about our future and about what we can do and add employees and build a company that really gives back, you know, in jobs, gives back in a lot of ways. And that's the exciting part. I mean, again, you heard me earlier saying, I think we're on a new wave of entrepreneurism going forward in the United States. I think corporate America is going to have all kinds of issues on its plate from different areas. But the entrepreneurs are really what's going to drive. And you know this, that 60% of all jobs are small business. And
yeah.
I think I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but the majority of new jobs are small business. And I think those numbers are kind of going to grow. And that's what's exciting for me, that I can go out there. We're going to build a company that's going to be successful, add employees, give back to the communities that we serve. You know, that's what gets me up in the morning. And to work with Ron, I mean, his vision, his marketing skills, and his sales skills is exciting. And I get to work on kind of the operating, the finance, which is what I love. So we have a good team. And it's not every day you get to work with somebody, you know, that you have a good rapport, good communication, and work well together. And that that's what drives me to continue to grow forward.
Yeah, just to add to that, you know, our backgrounds really complement each other. Is that my skills or my deficiencies is exactly where his skills are, and so we're able to you know, to take both of our experience and our skills and put those together to really drive this thing.
As I've been watching you all morning, I keep trying to think, what business could my brother and I get into that we would be? And I'm thinking we might get away with selling bait. I don't know.
He spent most of his time bailing you out, though. So.
Well, I'll tell you what makes my job rewarding. It's getting to come to the studio and visit with people that are so passionate about their work and just visibly, demonstrably enjoy what they're doing, genuinely enjoy serving other people. It's been an absolute delight having you guys on the show. How can our listeners get in touch with you, learn more about your work, and maybe seriously consider engaging your services?
Well, you certainly can go to our website, which is www.savadsolutions.com, and that's SIVADSOLUTIONS.com. So that's probably the easiest way, or you can email us at sales@savadsolutions.com.
Well, thank you so much. Todd, that was a good show, man. I'm glad you brought these guys down.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. You and I are a two-man shop, but we ought to be giving more thought to some of our processes.
Oh, well, I can tell you.
It's been eye-opening in that regard, too.
We've got a ton of processes that are absolutely broken down. Everything from booking guests to follow-up. to closing out the show.
In some instances, we don't have processes. You know,
that's
so.
Right. But here, we'll take a shot at the closing out the show process. You want to? All right, here I go. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, Ron Davis, Charles Davis, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.